wrestling fans, are you ready?
Yes, 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 yes.
For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, let's get ready to rumble!
And now, please welcome at this time your hosts, Graham GSM Matthews and RJ Marceau. You're listening to the next era of wrestling radio. This is Wrestle Rant Radio.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Wrestle Rant Radio here today for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. I'm Graham G.S.M. Matthews. Hope you guys are doing well and having a great week so far. We got WWE Backlash coming up on Saturday in France, but before then, one of the challengers to the WWE Women's Championship on that show joins us on Wrestle Rant Radio. We have Tiffany Stratton talking all things main roster run so far, being drafted to SmackDown, Ludwig Kaiser, her significant other in real life, obviously, being best friends with Nia Jax. Yeah, it is completely random, but we get some thoughts from her as far as how that came to be. In her thoughts and her new theme song as well. I had to ask about that. We've saved that for the very end, so we get some intel on her new music as well. Obviously, after we talk to Tiffany, we also have my conversation with Mr. Marceau, breaking down some things related to AEW, the Tony Khan comments from last week about WWE being the Harvey Weinstein of wrestling, which was a completely fucking weird thing to say. I know, Vince McMahon is a whole other story, obviously, and he's not wrong on that, but WWE as a whole, I don't know. We talk a little bit more about that here on the show, as well as some stuff that happened on Dynamite. We talk about the WWE draft, break down every round, Raw, SmackDown, who got the superior brand, and then finally, predictions for the aforementioned Backlash pay-per-view coming up in France on Saturday afternoon. New episodes of Wrestle Rant Radio available every single Thursday on WrestleRant.com, WrestleRantRadio.com, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Pandora, Amazon Music, and YouTube Music. Never miss a new episode every single Thursday. And now, without any further ado, it's Tiffy time. Enjoy my exclusive interview with one of the newest SmackDown superstars, Tiffany Stratton. Graham G.S.M. Matthews here with Bleach Report and Fansided, ahead of Backlash this coming Saturday, May 4th, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We got a WWE Women's Championship triple threat, Bayley defending against Naomi and our guest here today, Tiffany Stratton, one of the newest signees to SmackDown as of earlier this year, remaining on SmackDown as of last night, night two of the WWE draft. Tiffany, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. When we first spoke about a year ago, it was right before you won the NXT Women's Championship. Battleground, that would have been. Second time was right after you lost the championship, and now we're speaking to right before you contend for the championship again. So I feel like I just keep missing you when you don't have gold around your waist, but I'm hoping for a victory on Saturday, obviously. But that being said, you've been on SmackDown so far for a couple months. How's the main roster life been treating you so far?
It's been awesome. Everything has been just kind of happening super quickly. You know, the only thing that's been a little bit difficult is the traveling and the schedule of just on the go all the time, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
And you mentioned the travel. I mean, obviously, you were at Elimination Chamber, too. You made your main roster pay-per-view debut, not counting, like, the NXT PLEs, in the Royal Rumble match. And then a mere weeks later, you're in Australia for Elimination Chamber. You're going to be in Paris on Saturday for Backlash. Talk about not only the travel for those sort of shows, but, like, getting over in front of those fans, because very quickly, more so than most NXT call-ups, at least from my perspective, you've shown you've adapted to that environment very, very well, and fans are getting familiar with you fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. I honestly feel like I haven't really changed anything since being on NXT. I just feel like who I am, I feel like I fit the SmackDown and Raw regimen a little bit better, and honestly it's been just so amazing to see that I won the crowd over in Australia and now over in the United States. So I just feel like Australia kind of kickstarted everything for me, and I'm super grateful that that happened to me.
And coming off that reaction in Australia, are you like, listen, I'm glad I'm getting like endearing myself to the audience, but hopefully not too much because I still want to be a bad guy at the end of the day? Like, is that kind of going through your head at all?
Yeah, it's a little hard to like not fully embrace it, because I'm just so new to the scene. It's so cool that I have so many people behind me, and it's hard that I just can't embrace it. But at the same time, like, why would you not cheer me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know last time we spoke, it was right after, like I said, you had lost the NXT Women's Championship going into No Mercy. You had talked a little bit about having like the imposter syndrome, not like overwhelmingly, but like a little bit at certain points during that feud with Becky. Being on the main roster so far, again, this isn't week one. You've been here for a few months now. Does it feel like it could be too much too soon for you, or do you feel like you're right where you belong right now in the mix for the championship going into Backlash?
Yeah, I definitely think I've grown a lot since the Becky Lynch feud. And I feel like I like kind of come into the main roster, you're nervous as an NXT talent. You don't know if the crowd's gonna like you. Don't know if, like who you are as a person is gonna translate onto the TV screen on SmackDown or Raw. So, the fact that, I won them over, like I said, was super just reassuring for me. And yeah, I feel like at first I was like really worried, but now I'm like, you know what? Like I belong here. I've had such a good, genuine reaction. Like I don't need to doubt myself anymore. And I definitely feel so much more confident in where I am, my performances, my character, and just overall, I feel a lot more confident.
Of the four main roster PLEs that we've gotten so far this year, you've been on three of them. Of course, missing Mania itself, which is the biggest one, but you will have many Mania moments, of course, going forward. Does this feel like your WrestleMania to you, going for the championship in Backlash? And just talk about, like, again, being on SmackDown for the first few months, having to miss that show, but preparing you for something bigger right around the corner coming into the show.
Yeah, it's my first big title opportunity. I love triple threats. I think those are always super fun matches, and my opponents are Bayley and Naomi. Those are two big, veterans. They're the current women's champion, and that's a former women's champion. So I'm super excited. I get to go toe to toe with both of them. And yeah, I'm just super excited, and I can't wait to win this weekend.
You got your sights set on Bayley and Naomi, obviously. At some point, we got to see you go back around to Bianca, right? That was teased for a little while, moving away from it. But now that you guys are still on SmackDown, that's got to be something that we see at some point, right?
Oh yeah, I think Bianca and I would have such a great match. I feel like our movesets kind of line up very well. But yeah, I guess we're gonna be saving that for a bigger stage one day.
Hopefully, hey, listen, it could be a WrestleMania. I know there's talk right now of it being in Vegas, but are you sitting there hoping like it's in Minnesota come WrestleMania 41?
Yeah, no, I'm hearing like it's for sure gonna be in Vegas. Like before, I heard like, oh, it's for sure gonna be in Minnesota, but now it's Vegas. And then now I saw on Twitter like London or something like that. So I don't know, to be honest. Don't quote me on anything.
Yeah, I know. We know as much as anyone right now, but we'll see as it comes around. But Minnesota would obviously be cool for the hometown advantage for you at some point. Maybe not WrestleMania 41 necessarily, but at some point going down the road. But like I said, we came off the draft last night. Night two, you remain on SmackDown. Going into the draft, do you have any concerns? I mean, obviously it's over now and you're still on SmackDown, but like, do you hope to remain on SmackDown? Or was it like, if I go to Raw, cool? And if I go to Raw, is it a case of like, I have to kind of start over after building the momentum that I have on SmackDown?
Yeah, I wasn't too worried. I'm not too worried about whichever brand I'm gonna be on. I think, wherever I go, I'm gonna thrive and I'm gonna make the most out of it. And yeah, I mean, I think SmackDown is an amazing place for me to be. There's a lot of good challengers on that brand, so I'm excited for this year.
And it's a pretty great crop of competitors. From what we've seen so far, I think the rosters are set, but it's a lot of the same women that were there previously, which was already a pretty stacked roster. But between yourself, Bayley, Naomi, and the triple threat, Nia Jax coming on over, who I know you're obviously friends with as well, and we've seen in various videos and whatnot, a lot of different talent coming over to SmackDown. And just talk about that Nia Jax. You see that she comes over to Friday nights. How did that friendship come about? That seems like such a random pairing to me.
Yeah, so actually, we sat next to each other on our 20-hour flight to Australia, and we
Oh,
literally
wow.
had no other option but to become best friends. So, yeah, and then she kind of just took me under her wing, and now we're besties.
Now you got to be excited she's on SmackDown with you, right?
Yeah, travel buddy now.
So you got Nia Jax on SmackDown. I had just seen the headline literally hours ago of you talking to Chris Van Vliet, mentioning how you met Ludwig by doing like the rock paper, not meeting him, but like going on the first date with that whole thing, which is completely ridiculous. Clearly, you guys were already friends by that point, right? You didn't just meet by doing that, right?
No. We knew of each other. Like
Okay.
we've talked a couple of times at the performance center, but yeah, it's just kind of just happened. It was actually like a year ago. Tomorrow's my birthday. We were out. I was out downtown with some of my friends, and he was out as well. And I was just like, "Hey, what's up? Let's talk." And then it eventually got to the rock, paper, scissors thing, and yeah, the rest is hi history.
That's awesome. Well, happy early anniversary on that, and happy early
Thank you.
birthday, of course, as well. And you could celebrate your birthday as WWE Women's Champion, which is crazy. But he's on
Right.
SmackDown now too, so that obviously is a very big thing for you. You got Nia on the show, which is your new best friend, like you said, but he's also finally in the same show as you, which is pretty cool for you guys.
He actually isn't. He's on Raw.
Oh my God, I thought he got drafted to SmackDown. Never mind.
No, he
Hopefully
didn't,
next year, right?
unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, hopefully in the 2024 draft, but
Yeah.
still, you got Nia. That's not too bad.
I have Naya, at least.
Exactly. Nia's not a bad person to have on the same show. But as we wind down here, talking about just other matches you would want to see on SmackDown, anyone that you saw come over that you were like, well, I'm really excited to face this person at some point.
I think, Jade was already on the brand, but I think me versus Jade would be amazing. I think there's so many matches lined up for me. When Charlotte comes back, I would love to have a match with Charlotte. And yeah, I can't really remember who else was drafted to SmackDown, but me versus Bianca, me versus Jade, me versus Charlotte. I just feel like there's so many amazing matches lined up for me.
A lot of different possibilities for sure. Blair Davenport from NXT also coming up too. So
Yeah.
a lot of different names for sure. Last question for you, Tiffany. I know in the last couple of months you got a theme song change as well. People take this stuff very seriously. They love the original theme that you had in NXT getting changed now that you're on the main roster. Has the Tiffy time in front of it. Your thoughts on the song, and then like, have you been able to get accustomed to it so far on SmackDown?
I like it. I don't know why everyone else doesn't like it. I think like the Tiffy time, I've been wanting that from the very beginning, and I'm so glad that we have that now. I like the music. It has like a cool like little dun dun dun, I don't know, like a little beat in it where I feel like my other music was just kind of like straight across the board,
It's
So I
part of
don't
the.
know why they're so mad about it.
Yeah, no, listen, everyone's gonna have their opinions. Every
Right.
theme song's different, which I totally understand, but it's a part of the evolution of the character, which I totally get. I was partial to the other theme, but listen, it might grow on me over time. We will soon
Yeah.
see, especially if you become a champion on Saturday against Bayley Naomi at Backlash in that triple threat match. And like I said, happy early birthday, happy early anniversary, and best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Big thanks to Tiffany for the time. Enjoyed it as always. Our interview should also be up in article form in the next few days over at dailyddt.com before Backlash on Saturday, so check it out. And the video version as well over on youtube.com/WrestleRant. So, Mr. Marceau, we got a lot to talk about here today as it pertains to WWE and AEW. A week ago here on the show, we made our rosters for Raw and SmackDown coming out of the draft. We didn't switch a lot of names, and dare I say, we got a lot of the moves actually accurate. We were pretty spot on with a majority of our roster, which is great. Not an overly eventful or exciting draft, I would say, but certainly some moves were made that I was certainly in favor of, and we will be breaking it down here today. But how are you recovering from the WWE and NFL drafts? Do you still have draft fever?
Yeah, I was doing good. I mean, like you said, I think it was pretty, our picks were pretty on point. I think a lot of it stayed the same, which isn't always a bad thing. I mean, I don't think everyone had a change, and I think the changes they did make made sense. And I thought it was overall a good draft. Like I said, I think people might have been upset that it wasn't too much moving, but I think the rosters were pretty well tuned before, and you just had to maybe mix a few pieces around that were big on each go and probably needed a new face change. So I thought overall it was a good 2 nights of the WWE draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said that last week to where when we were putting together the draft, again, I'd have to go back and check it out, but there wasn't really a lot of change or movement that was needed across the two brands, at least the top tier players, because a lot of the mid-card and main event players kind of needed to stay where they were to finish out current stories and, set up future stories like Orton and Rhodes, for example. We'll talk about each round of the draft as far as who went where and the moves that were made, but like the Intercontinental Championship scene, the United States Championship scene, a lot of those names needed to stay where they are to set up stories. And if they did move, I would have been more upset. So I'm actually kind of glad that they stayed put where they were. As far as the execution of it, that kind of remains an issue with a lot of people because the draft itself isn't really overly exciting. Not unlike the NFL draft that a lot of people watch and get excited about. Quickly on that, was there any big moves made in the NFL draft that surprised you or that you were satisfied about?
I mean, I think it was a pretty honestly, I feel like this year more than most was like probably one of the most predictable, at least first rounds, and they've had in a while. The Michael Penix pick by the Falcons was definitely the big shocker. I mean, they just paid Kirk Cousins like $100 million guaranteed to come play quarterback, and then they drafted one. So that was definitely the biggest surprise, I'd say. But based on, like, projections and kind of, like, the class itself, it was pretty on point to what they did. It's kind of weird because it was, like, one of the last classes of, like, the COVID era.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, there's a lot of kids that might be a little bit older, and then there's, like, the really good kids that are younger. So it's kind of still, like, a mixed pot. I think next first year of non-COVID kids, I think the class will probably be a little bit stronger next year. But, I mean, it's just crazy. There's some kids that have been in school for, like, 6 years, and some kids that have only been three. So kind of misses up a little bit. But I thought it was pretty good, honestly.
How many Bulldogs players got drafted?
Oof, that's a good question. I mean, from my knowledge, at least seven did.
Oh, wow.
I think. So, I think it was at least seven or eight.
You think that's more than usual?
No, I think that's pretty on point normally. The big schools usually probably have like six or seven kids get drafted every year.
When you see these people get drafted, obviously it's a big get for whatever team they go to, but does it make you worried for the future of the Bulldogs heading into next season, or are you kind of confident they're going to continue to do well?
They'll do well. At this point, they recruit well every year, so I'm not too worried about it at this point.
Very, very nice there. Well, speaking of that, as far as we go into the draft, I'll ask you about like kind of which show, you know, some rosters losing some star power, NXT included. You mentioned the recruiting. That's something WWE could be doing better right now with NXT as far as replenishing that pod, because in the past they haven't really had an issue with that. But as we've gone, you know, further and further into the NXT 2.0 era, a lot of those cornerstones, Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes, Grayson Waller, Tiffany Stratton, Lyra Valkyria, are now all on the main roster. And they haven't really brought in a lot of new people to kind of fill in those spots those people are leaving behind. So we'll talk about that as we go a little bit further on here, as we discuss the draft. But I do want to get the AEW stuff out of the way first, because I know we talked last week about Tony Khan getting attacked by the Elite, why we weren't a fan of the angle. I did say that I think it was worth giving a shot. I mean, not just in general as far as a fan, but from a company standpoint, it's worth trying to at least garner up some buzz around the product, whether it's positive or negative. And a lot of it was positive. I'm not going to sit here and say I liked what I saw last week. I know you didn't like what you saw last week. I thought it was kind of fucking goofy. But, you know, it's worth giving a shot to see where it goes, as long as it doesn't become NWO Light. And I kind of was worried for a second when Dynamite started last night. I caught the show late last night. I'm thinking this is almost NWOS, because they showed Tony Khan in his office in a fucking neck brace and giving the most monotone delivery you could possibly imagine. And they kind of had the static cut in it. I'm like, oh God, are we going to see the Bucks with like a fucking held camera footage? Like, I know S.H.I.E.L.D. did it. The S.H.I.E.L.D. did it back in the day, but they weren't so NWO-esque where it was like ripping off the NWO. It was obviously inspired by them, but this would be very much ripped off from the NWO had they done that. But it was a little bit different. They were in the production truck and they cut Tony Khan off. So Tony Khan was selling, you know, we talk about the NFL draft. Tony Khan was selling the neck brace during the draft last Thursday, as well as on Friday as well. He talked to the NFL Network about some of the picks that he was going to make, and he didn't give anything away, obviously. But they asked him about the neck brace, which kind of caused him to go into a bit of a mini rant about how AEW is the Pepsi of pro wrestling, which is true. I think that's an accurate comparison, an apt comparison. Before seeing the WWE, their evil, you know, rival, which was okay, I guess, are the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling, which I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't drink alcohol at all. I usually get soda. I usually get Coke. I usually get Pepsi. I can't say I've gone to a restaurant and ordered the Harvey Weinstein off the beverages menu. I mean, that really just kind of came out of nowhere. We know how he feels about certain things in WWE. And that's not to say that, you know, Vince McMahon is not a monster, because he absolutely is, obviously. But he didn't say Vince McMahon. He never actually uttered his name once. He was talking about WWE itself. And the company itself is guilty of a lot of shit. But I think to paint them with one broad brush by calling them the Harvey Weinstein of WWE, or I'm sorry, calling WWE the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling, is not fair. So I know you had seen that as well and were like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a shot, just to take a shot. And I mean, if it's a shot to take at Vince, like, okay, he doesn't even work there anymore. So, like, I think Tony's starting to realize that, like, the people that, like, didn't like WWE because of Vince, like, that doesn't really work anymore because Vince's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, no one really has, like, the same, like, built-up animosity as they do to Vince as they do for Triple H. Like, no one has any, like, vendetta against Triple H. I mean, if anything, it's like, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, like, we're going to take a shot at the guy that used to work there. Yeah. Like, how does that feel? But if anything, people should be, like, he's the evil billionaire at this point, right? Like, he's the billionaire running the show. It's not like he's a little guy that's chugging along. It's not like he's some, I don't know, promoter that doesn't. He has the money, so it's. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it was just a dumb comment. I mean, even the guys at NFL Network were like laughing, like they literally like that makes legit no sense.
Yeah, they immediately cut it short. Yeah.
His normal, like, oh, you want to find out what happened to me? Like, come to Dynamite on Tuesday nights and blah, blah, blah. Like, do his stupid fucking plugging and not giving any answers, like he always does. So it was. It was funny, but like I said, the whole Harvey Weinstein thing was just dumb.
I mean, the guy can't just help himself, man. Like, he can go on there and promote a show, which I thought was great. Again, I don't really... I thought the neck brace thing was stupid. Do you know of any football fans... Because you're kind of plugged into that world, obviously. Do you know of anyone that had seen that and thought it more of like, oh, that's kind of funny that he's going along with the wrestling thing, or he just looks fucking stupid? Do you know what the reaction to it was it from non-wrestling fans at all?
I didn't really see one from the, I mean, no one that I know that likes football even probably knows or cared about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I have seen things that, like, Jaguar fans have posted. They're like, it doesn't sound like they really like the Khan family just because they really haven't been that good since they've owned the team. So, I think they're probably just like, what the fuck? We just want to be good. And why are you dealing with this wrestling stuff that we could care less about?
Shad Khan was not on Dynamite this week. They did obviously show him at the end of Dynamite last week. We talked about that. They did not show him this week. Who we did see was Kenny Omega, actually, a fellow EVP, which was not a surprise. They advertised him in advance, and they need to do a better job of boosting the ratings for the weekly shows, which is why they're doing this angle. They didn't have him out there as a surprise because it wasn't supposed to be like a surprise comeback. It was supposed to be him addressing his status and his injury, and I believe he is due to undergo surgery. The surgery I think he may have talked about in his promo, but he hasn't undergone it yet, and he's been off TV for 4 or 5 months almost now, actually, at this point. So he's going to be gone for a while yet, unfortunately. I thought they might have him on the show to announce that since he is also an EVP, that he might be the new authority figure, which he very well could be, but they did end the show with him not announcing that, kind of implying it, but then he was attacked by the Elite. So your thoughts on the role that Kenny Omega could play in this storyline, and does that maybe not pique your interest at all? But does it at least make it a bit more bearable that we might have a new authority figure on the show that hopefully is not Tony Khan? I know we saw him. I said if that angle is intended to write him out indefinitely and we never see Tony Khan again on AEW television, then that's great. And then they show him the very next week starting the show from his home remotely, the fucking neck brace on. I'm thinking, okay, this is just stupid. And then I don't know if he still comes out before the crowd and kind of addresses them. I would hope not if he really wants to sell the angle, because I know he starts every show before it starts. He starts every live show coming out and talking to the audience, which I hope he stops doing now to kind of sell this attack. But no, Kenny Omega, maybe the new authority figure. Your thoughts on that development on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a direction to go, and I don't know if I particularly like it. I would probably pick someone that's not like involved with them, or mm-hmm. someone that like has some more notoriety, but like I said, if it gets Tony off TV, I guess it's a positive. I don't think Tony can help himself. I assume we'll see him pretty soon.
Yeah, probably not too. In the not-too-distant future, I imagine we will probably see him again in some form or fashion. Because like you said, it just seems like whenever they get some goodwill going, good momentum and whatnot, some good buzz going, he just kind of, not ruins it, but takes away from it by saying something stupid or doing something that's just completely unnecessary. And hopefully that doesn't happen anytime soon. One last AEW thing they did also announce on the show that come Double or Nothing, we found out going into Dynamite last night, we were told that we would find out Swerve Strickland's opponent for the AEW World Championship at Double or Nothing. We did indeed find out at the beginning of the show. It's going to be the returning Christian Cage. Now, to your point in which you DM'd me a couple days ago, not about this, but about something else, I will pose the same question to you. What happened to the rankings? There's no rankings. I mean, listen, I love Christian. I think this will be a great match. They attempted to explain it by saying, you know, we teamed it all in and you lost, Christian told Swerve. And you also broke into Nick Wayne's house, and I haven't forgotten about that. So they try to really tie it together, which I appreciate. But we haven't seen the guy in a month or two. He hasn't won a match in a while. So why would he then all of... I mean, I guess we have heel authority figures, which I guess you could say is the reason why he's getting a title shot. Obviously, I would have to imagine. But then they just brought back the power rankings. Just abandon that concept altogether. If you're just going to go this route. The WWE stuff is fine. Where you bring someone back, you give them a title shot. And I'm looking forward to the match. But don't tell me then that wins and losses matter all this much. And you're trying to play up these rankings if at the end of the day, they really don't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's better than my idea. Like I said, I thought we were going to get Jack Perry. Mm-hmm. I would have fucking hated that. So maybe, I mean, I think that probably eventually that's what we're going to get, but maybe they're going to flesh it out a little bit longer. But like you said, Christian, I like Christian originally with AEW. It's kind of tiresome for me now. Like, your dad's dead. Like, the whole Edge feud was kind of like, by the end, I was just ready for it to end. And like you said, then he just comes back. Okay, so you attacked Nick Wayne. You lost a match 6 months ago, so you just get a title match, I guess. I mean, I hope they have a bigger match planned for that show, because if that's like the main event or the main attraction, I don't really know how many people are going to be buying that pay-per-view. But it should be a good match overall, but I feel like they could do better for what's considered, I think, before All Out was like their like WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was their first ever pay-per-view. We were there 5 years ago, which is crazy to think about. The exact same day to May 24th, I think it is. It's not on the same day. It's actually Double or Nothing is on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend this year, not Saturday. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's a good match, but they still need to build up bigger matches for that show. They don't have a whole lot of time to do so. I thought we might get something last night with, like, the Blackpool Combat Club and the Don Callis family, but Will Ospreay is facing Roderick Strong. I don't know what Danielson's doing. He might still be selling the attack or the injury from Ospreay. MJF is out right now. The report came out that he's going to be out for a while. He did not think he had to undergo surgery, and now he does. So that pushes back his comeback even more because the physical therapy wasn't working. So that's a real unfortunate blow to the roster as well. And then Omega's not back anytime soon. So they kind of have to figure some stuff out. The elite heel authority figure shtick is kind of like their way of doing that. But they still need some supporting stories beyond that to make that card interesting. So as we transition now over to the WWE draft, we don't have to go through every single pick, obviously, but night one was a little less eventful than night two. A lot of different picks and moves being made here, so I'll kind of point out the obvious ones. In round one, we had all the same people on the same shows. Bianca staying on SmackDown, she was the first overall pick. Jey Uso staying on Raw. Rollins staying on Raw. Again, no surprise there for really any of them. But we did get an NXT star, and this is not the first time an NXT star has been involved in the first round of the draft, because Finn Balor was drafted in the first round in 2016. But he is the highest draftee in NXT history. Balor was drafted, I want to say, fourth or fifth in the first round. Hayes was drafted third to SmackDown. So Carmelo Hayes, a former NXT and NXT North American champion, headed to Friday nights, had a main event match on that same show with the undisputed WWE champion Cody Rhodes, came up short but looking good in defeat. We knew Carmelo was headed to the main roster, but didn't think it would be this high. Your thoughts on Hayes headed to Friday night SmackDown, and we've talked about him before, but his ceiling for success on the main roster.
Yeah, I think we said he was going to SmackDown. He was on SmackDown before. He was like in the U.S. title tournament leading into WrestleMania, and he didn't make it too far. But I think him going to SmackDown makes sense. His ceiling, I feel like it's very 50-50, I guess. I feel like he could be a big star. He could kind of just be a mid-card guy. Obviously, getting drafted third, main event with Cody. I assume they see him at a higher light. Obviously, that can change very quickly, I feel like, in WWE. But I think the drafting position in this first match, like, kind of after this whole draft and refreshing everything, I've seen that they're very high on him. But I don't know. For some reason, I just don't see him being, like, a main event guy for them. They can prove me wrong. If I was putting my money on it, he'd just be, like, a mid-card guy.
Well, a lot of their upper mid-card guys actually got drafted to Raw, which we'll talk about at the end when we go over the overall rosters, but it didn't really feel like Cody was left with a lot of compelling opponents or challengers to his title reign in the immediate future. Now, I'm not saying Hayes should get it. I mean, he just faced Cody Rhodes on SmackDown. He shouldn't get the shot in June or in July. That's kind of a long-term project there, is building him up as a main event guy. But do you think that could work in his favor, though, with Roman Reigns not around for the foreseeable future? Some of the bigger names going to Raw, like the Gunther staying on Raw. They don't really have a very deep main event scene on SmackDown. So I think that might actually work in his favor long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. That kind of like hinges on when Roman comes back, what's going to happen with Rock. So I think maybe that's why they're just a little bit thinner, because there are big-time players that just aren't in the picture right now. So I think we'll see, and they like the mid-card, what they have. But, I mean, I agree that they don't have a lot of main event talent, but like I said, I think they know they have Roman and Rock in their back pocket.
Yeah, now Roman, I know he's a free agent. That was another thing, too. He declared himself ineligible on night one, so that kind of threw my draft pool for a loop there, because they didn't announce it until, like, the show, and like right before the picks were made for the first round, so that kind of threw me for a loop, which led the Bloodline to be drafted round three, which was pretty fucking dumb. Underneath Ricochet, Nia Jax, and Liv Morgan, which was comical. But Bron Breakker going to Raw was probably the top takeaway from round two on night one. Orton staying on SmackDown. Nia Jax going to SmackDown. I said that last week. I'm glad I was right on that. Liv Morgan staying where she is, as she should. Bron Breakker, I mean, we talk about Carmelo Hayes on SmackDown and how far he'll go. Him going to Raw was interesting because he just showed up on SmackDown. Maybe they don't want him and Hayes being on the same show, because Breakker's going to be a babyface. Hayes will clearly be a heel, I would imagine. They probably don't want them getting involved with each other quite yet. But Breakker going to Raw is interesting as far as, what do you think that means for his future? Do you think that they're going to have him, you know, go a little bit higher up the card, or do you think he might get lost in the mid-card shuffle? What do you expect from Bron Breakker on Monday nights?
I think for Breakker, I think going to Raw made sense. I feel like he could be the one to beat Sammy for the IC title. I don't think you push him all the way up to the World Heavyweight Championship right away, but, I mean, it's still possible. I mean, I think eventually Gunther will get it, and we'll see what happens from there, but with Breakker, I think SmackDown, it's like, if he's a heel, he wouldn't go after Logan Paul. Like Cody, like I said, they already have Roman and Rock. I don't think he's losing the belt anytime soon. On Raw, I feel like there's not really, like, there are main event players, but there's not, like, that one breakaway star. So, I think, like I said, with Breakker, like, he could be the one to beat Sammy, and I'm assuming Gunther would probably win the World Heavyweight title somewhere down the line. But, I mean, I think it makes sense on that aspect. I mean, yeah, we have Punk and Drew. They're kind of doing their own thing. But besides that, everyone else is kind of just there.
I think it might help the fact that Punk and Drew, and then Rollins as well, they're all out right now. I mean, Drew's still on the show, but he's not wrestling house shows. And I mean, I'm hoping he's cleared in time for Clash at the Castle. I mean, that's in Scotland. He kind of has to be on that show. I don't think Punk will be ready by then. I know he's been involved fairly, you know, quite a bit lately, but I don't know if he'll be involved that much going forward and until he's ready to be, cleared to compete again. But Bron Breakker could kind of fill in one of those roles in the meantime. Maybe not competing for the World Heavyweight Championship, but hopefully getting a consistent amount of television time. They drafted a lot of people to Raw, which they typically do. It's a three-hour show. Not everyone's going to get over or, you know, find meaningful television time on night one or, you know, on day one. But hopefully over time he can kind of find his footing as a top-tier player on that show, which I think he will, because I think Breakker has that potential. In round three, Ricochet staying on Raw, who gives a shit? Sheamus staying on Raw, quote-unquote. He came back to Raw recently, but prior to that point, he was on SmackDown, so he actually did switch shows. I'm not really sure what about that people missed, but, you know, he's been on Raw lately, so people see that as no change, whatever. The Bloodline being drafted third in round three, which is ridiculous. That includes Sokoa, Tonga, Heyman. And then LA Knight also staying put on Friday nights too, which I thought was key. So he can feud with Logan Paul. I thought for sure he was going to Raw, and I'm glad I was wrong. So it looks like LA Knight, because otherwise he just lost to AJ Styles, He's probably not facing Cody anytime soon. They could have easily swapped him over to Raw. But this tells me that they still have plans to have him beat Logan Paul for that championship. Because otherwise, I don't know what else you're doing with him on Friday nights. So anyone else from this round standing out, including LA Knight?
Yeah, I think, like you said, with LA Knight, I also just feel like he's a big enough star that they kind of drafted a couple bigger stars, main event stars, away from SmackDown. So I feel like he needed to stay there and hopefully fulfill him beating Logan Paul. Maybe we'll just manifest at this point. We just keep saying it, so hopefully that's the case. But Ricochet third round, I honestly belly laughed. like the guy, but third round, come on. That's kind of a joke. Bloodline as well, they're one of the biggest things. You draft them in the third round, okay, I guess. It was kind of a weird rally, so, and then LA Knight was the last one, so I was kind of glad that he was on SmackDown, but the other ones were kind of all head-scratchers. Just like, especially the Ricochet one, he's never even on the show. I don't really get it, honestly.
Well, he's been, to his credit, he's been on a fair amount lately, feuding with Judgment Day, but that's not to say, I'm not defending him going as high as he is. He really just has no, I don't want to say no value, that's not accurate, but at this point, he's clearly slotted at a certain level, and he really hasn't been overly interesting in a long time. I would have actually liked to see him on SmackDown, but they probably don't want to switch over Samantha Irvin to SmackDown because they're married, so he probably would have gone to SmackDown if it wasn't for that, but they got to keep the married couples on the same show as they should, so that's why he didn't get drafted. But you mentioned how he went in the third round. He was drafted over the number one contender to the WWE Championship, AJ Styles, which tells me that these GMs who are apparently making these picks, and I thought this process would be improved when we had GMs, but clearly not. They had the war rooms, which I thought was a nice touch, but at the same time, you had these random-ass people that we've never even seen before celebrating picks for, why would they give a shit? Like Bubba Ray Dudley, why does he give a fuck who ends up on Raw? He's in there, Teddy Long, why? These people don't give a shit, so why are they even in there? It was weird. But you had AJ Styles going round four, which again tells me that the GMs have no faith that he's going to win the WWE Championship from Cody Rhodes on Saturday, which we know he's not. Spoiler alert, we'll talk about it soon, but we know he's not. But still, I thought that was dumb that he went last round. Chad Gable staying on Raw, again, makes sense to finish the story, no pun intended, with Sami Zayn. Andrade going to SmackDown, kind of a lateral move. And Kiana James getting the call up as well from NXT. So AJ to SmackDown, Academy to Raw, Andrade to SmackDown, Kiana James to Raw. Any names stand out here, Mr. Marceau?
Kiana James, one that stuck out to me. I was a bit surprised. I know you're her biggest fan, so you must have been stoked. I think she's good, not great. She's I just don't think she was maybe ready to get called up. She really hasn't done that much in NXT, and I wouldn't say, I'm overly impressed with her. So I feel like that was kind of a stick out. I feel like it's oh, okay, I guess. On Raw, Blair Davenport was drafted. I think she's a lot farther along than Kiana James. Yeah. So, that one made sense. I feel like she's also, done a little bit more, and she's also been in the business a lot longer, so I don't know. That one was probably a head-scratcher to me. You can't take all the great women off NXT. I think it's one of those I just don't really know where she's on Raw. What are they going to do with her? I guess that's my thing. She's one of those people that got drafted. I'm like, okay, what's the end game for her?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think they should have, when you call people from NXT, you should have a thought of, what you see them as.
Yeah.
Not just drafting them for the sake of, they've been on the show for a while, we got to draft them to Raw.
We'll talk about her when we get to night two in a second, but Blair Davenport, you mentioned, she's obviously much further along. She's been wrestling for a long time. A lot of the people that called up from NXT are experienced veterans that were already experienced before arriving in NXT. So, Ilya, Carmelo, they're NXT 2.0 stars, but they were wrestling even before that point. Kiana James was not. She's one of those NXT 2.0 NIL athlete projects. And she's not bad. I don't care about her character. You kind of made that clear as well. But I don't really give a shit about her personally. But she's not bad. I just kind of wonder, what can you really do with her from day one? Lyra's another one. Lyra's obviously pretty well off as far as her experience level. Say what you will about her character being over, whatever, but, you know, she's already kind of there. She is main roster ready and has been for a while. Kiana, I think, would have benefited from sticking around a little bit longer, if only to maybe challenge for or win the NXT Women's North American Championship. So that one kind of came out of nowhere. The crowd didn't really react. Maybe she'll exceed expectations and become a big star on Raw, but they called up someone that was even experienced than Zoe Stark last year, and no one gave a shit. I mean, she had a decent run early on. We were praising her call-up work, and they handled her fairly well, and then they clearly lost interest, and I see the same thing, I think, happening to her. Unless she'll probably find a partner and join the tag team division. It's typically how it goes. That's the blueprint. That's the blueprint for women that you don't know what to do with in WWE. Who that would be, I don't know, but that's kind of how I see her faring on Monday nights. The rest of the supplemental picks weren't really anything to write home about. We had the OC, the rest of the OC staying on SmackDown with Meechin. Baron Corbin heading from NXT back to SmackDown. I want to mention him in a second, but Cedric Alexander and Ajante the Adonis going to SmackDown. Shayna Baszler to Raw. Zoe Stark to Raw. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn, yes, they are still employed, are headed to Raw. Hopefully getting more TV time there. Not optimistic, but there's a chance. And then Ivar staying on Raw. So not a lot to really write home about here, like I said, but I think Baron Corbin headed to SmackDown is interesting. Again, like I said earlier with Carmelo, I think the lack of star power on SmackDown could work in his favor, and he might actually get an actual opportunity to show what he can do and maybe push that at a meaningful level as opposed to just being there losing to everyone. So that's kind of my hope with Corbin being on the main roster, hopefully with the revamped gimmick that he had in NXT.
Yeah, I think his sky, not the sky's the limit for him, but I think he has a good chance. Like you said, with less star power, I think he could get some momentum going. I mean, it is, I feel like the bigger stars on SmackDown are probably heels, so we'll see how that works in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But I thought Kim getting called up was nice. Fire, amazing, going to Raw. Hopefully she gets more TV time. I doubt it, but we'll see. And those other people, I mean, is what it is at this point.
Yeah, the other people weren't really anything surprising or game changers. But, you know, selfishly, I'm looking forward to seeing Corbin back on the main roster. On night two, Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser. So Kaiser's a number one overall pick in the WWE draft, staying on Raw. So Gunther being the number one pick is awesome because he's just been an incredible asset to this company over the past year. So that's a great endorsement for him. Jade being the first overall pick for SmackDown, great to see as well. A lot like Bianca on night one. Keeping them together makes sense. And that's going to be where Charlotte ends up too, because Andrade being on SmackDown means that Charlotte is staying on SmackDown too. So you got Charlotte, Bayley, Jade, and Bianca, and Naomi, and Tiffany all on the same show. That's like a SmackDown 6 right there. I hate to even bring that up because nothing will ever compare to the original SmackDown 6, but if you were to make one, it would be that. I mean, that's an incredible talent pool right there. Damage Control headed from SmackDown to Raw, which I think we expected and should have happened to give Raw a boost of heel flavor in the women's division. And Kevin Owens, a first-round draft pick, which surprised me, staying on SmackDown. So of Imperium, Jade, Damage Control, and Kevin Owens, any of these stand out to you, Mr. Marceau?
I think Damage Control was the one that needed to happen the most. Like, people that needed to move from SmackDown to Raw or vice versa. They just were been so much in the whole Bayley stuff that they couldn't, like, at this point they had to move brands. I mean, they couldn't stay around on SmackDown much longer, so I think that was one that made a lot of sense, and I like moving them to Raw. I mean, everything else I feel like was pretty chalk from there.
Yeah, everyone kind of stayed
there. Drafted earlier, like you said, it was a nice endorsement, but I mean, when are we going to see more of her?
Yeah, we'll talk about it, but Backlash is getting a tag team title shot. Do you think they're easing their way into her working more singles matches down the road, but not immediately? And do you think that's by design?
Yeah.
I mean, that might be by design, too, so she kind of eases her way into the process so she's not thrown into the deep end from day one.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the tag team thing might be the way to go with her. But, yeah, it's at some point we do need to see more of her in singles competition to kind of see how, you know, if she's improved at all in her time away from TV, because she's been they announced her signing in September. And they didn't use her until January, February, March, now, April, May, whatever. So we definitely need to see more of her soon. And I think the tag team way might be their way of doing that. CM Punk was at the top of the second round for Raw. So he's staying where he is. Same thing with the Pride and Tiffany Stratton. Again, all staying put. I like all of those picks. Braun Strowman is back. Not only is he back and on Raw, but he returned on Monday Night Raw, actually, this week, interacting with Logan Paul. No real indication as far as what's next for him, because Logan Paul's on SmackDown as the United States champion. I guess he doesn't have to stay on SmackDown. He could work Raw matches after he loses that belt, because he was technically a free agent before winning the championship. I guess the championship has to stay on the show, but he himself maybe might be able to flip between brands. I don't know. But Braun Strowman's back, so he's not facing Logan Paul anytime soon. What do you think Braun Strowman does now that he's back? Does he reunite with Ricochet in the tag team ranks? Does he kind of find a spot closer to the main event scene? Or does he get involved with maybe even the Uncle Howdy stuff when that kind of takes shape in the next couple of weeks or months?
Yeah, we'll see. I think probably more the latter. I mean, I don't want to see him in Ricochet again. I don't think I see him in the main event scene. I think this maybe just get him on TV, get him back in the in front of the faces, and he'll do something with the whole Uncle Howdy stuff. I just think that makes the most sense.
I mean, he's a nice addition to the show. He's been gone for a year. I know I had seen from PW Insider yesterday that I think Eric Rowan is officially back with the company. He signed a WWE deal recently. So, I mean, getting them back together on the Uncle Howdy stuff would be cool. It's better than him just going out there doing nothing. They used him well when he first came back in 2022, and then he got hurt. So I hope they can keep that going on Raw. And they have a lot of meat, as Big E would say, on Monday nights. Between him, Gunther, Braun Strowman's on the show. I mean, he is Braun Strowman. Bronson Reed, I meant to say. Sheamus, Drew. So he can mix it up with a lot of those people. I think there's some interesting matchups there. In round three, and no, Drew McIntyre still has not been drafted. You had the LWO and Legado going to Raw and SmackDown, respectively. So you split them up, thank God. McIntyre finally got drafted beyond or underneath LWO and Legado, which was comical. And Nakamura going to SmackDown, which, who gives a shit? I mean, I already told you, I would have drafted him to NXT. Maybe that could still happen. It hasn't happened yet. But for now, he's going to SmackDown. McIntyre going as low as he did was pretty dumb to me. That was the top takeaway from this round. But I think they could have just... I know the whole point is, oh, I got drafted after CM Punk. That shouldn't have been the case. I get that. But you could have accomplished that by just having him, you know, be the next Raw pick in round two. Instead, they picked Braun Strowman in round two, who hasn't been around in a fucking year. Whereas Drew just won the World Heavyweight Championship, albeit for 5 minutes, but he did win the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania and been one of the better parts of Raw all year. So I thought that was kind of silly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like one of those things, is like how much of the rank the picks actually, like,
yeah,
how much does it actually like correlate to what they see these people? Like, I think, it, like I said, the first round, I feel like it does make sense. Like, those should be, like, the top people that you see, or, like, that's who it is. But, like, second round, I feel like maybe it's, like, more potential, or, like, somewhere you see it. So, like, I feel like that's maybe the direction they're going in. Like I said, I obviously think this specific case was obviously, like, huge drafted behind Punk. I would have, like you said, probably had him picked second after Punk, like, the second round pick, and then Strowman could have been the third round. But, I mean, maybe they just want to do, like, oh, I was picked the whole round before him. Like I said, doesn't really make a lot of sense. No, does it really matter? No, but I think it feeds them more into the story. But
yeah,
like I said, I don't know how much the picks actually correlate to companies pushing or thoughts on these people.
Yeah, no, I don't think it means much, but I just think if they want to make it more realistic or make it mean more like an actual draft, then they probably should. I mean, if you and I were picking a roster right now and we were to do our own mock draft and you would pick stars and I would pick stars, you would clearly want the more important stars first. I wouldn't think you would pick Braun Strowman over Drew McIntyre. I don't know if anyone with a working...
He's a blue chipper.
you said, oh, they usually sometimes, you know, in an actual draft or even just in general, whatever, you might pick someone with potential like, oh, Carmelo Hayes or an Ilya Dragunov or a younger star in the roster. That Braun... I laughed when you said that because I'm thinking, oh, yeah, Braun Strowman, that blue chipper, like, oh, he is a real bright future, you know? Hasn't already been here in 10 years.
He is. He's transferred, you know, was a breakout at Wichita State, and now he's going to the big leagues. Hey, he's got a blue chip on him.
I was thinking, you know, when you said that, I was thinking of, what's a college? Penn State, maybe? Penn State? Can I say Penn State? I don't know. Yeah. I was thinking, where did he come from? Wichita State's a good school, too. Yeah, I know. I still remember the whole... I'm old enough to remember the whole Sandusky thing from 10-plus years ago, that whole controversy with that disgusting situation. I was in high school at that point. But yeah, Braun going around two was stupid. Round four, yeah, again, this is the same thing. Why would the Judgment Day go so... Like, why would you pick Shinsuke Nakamura before the Judgment Day? I mean, give me a fucking break. Naomi on SmackDown, Ilya Dragunov...
You're picking the least valuable parts of it.
What'd you say?
But you're picking the least valuable parts of the whole group.
I get... But Finn Balor's still in there, and still... But I suppose...
Yeah, but I just... But like I said, at the end of the day, like, does it... Like, I think it fed more into the fact, like, I think, like, Dom was like, how are we fourth down picks? And Priest was like, because you guys suck. I'm like... wrong. But like I said, like, I get it. Like, Priest, I guess, specifically, like, he just held the tag belts for a long time. I mean, like, obviously, he's not a tag team champion anymore, but, I mean, it doesn't, I don't think it helps that, like, Dom and JD are basically just, like, grade A flunkies at this point.
Yeah, but, yeah, I agree, but, again, how much logic can you really put into it? But when you draft Shinsuke Nakamura, who has not won a match and God knows how long. Shinsuke, dude? Shinsuke? Like, how was he round three? And I love the guy. Love the guy. Why the fuck was he round three? That makes no sense. That is stupid. But they have Judgment Day on Raw. Naomi staying on SmackDown. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven again. Why were they around for? What are we doing here? But anyway, Ilya Dragunov from NXT is headed to Monday Night Raw. Same question I asked you earlier. What do you see him doing on Monday nights? Him and Gunther are on the same show. So as he said in a .com interview the other day, that's destiny right there. That is destiny, in my opinion, as well. Maybe the Intercontinental Championship. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people on Raw you can mix it up with, have interesting matchups with. I really like the decision to move him to Raw.
Yeah, I agree. I think going to Raw for him made the most sense. I think there's a ton of people for him to have good matches with. And, I mean, he just knocked Shinsuke Nakamura over to SmackDown. So, I thought Ilya going to Raw made the most sense. I think potential's there. He has a lot of opponents to work with, and I thought it made probably one of the most picks that made the most sense, especially on a call-up basis.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he's done it all that you can do in NXT, and it was time for him to move on up. Round five, The New Day, Raw, SmackDown, pretty deadly. Again, Candice LeRae, Indy, it was the SmackDown, or it was the tag team round, rather. They're headed to the SmackDown. Another NXT call-up, though, to Raw, Lyra Valkyria, the now former NXT Women's Champion, headed to Monday nights. Again, another big pickup. I figured she might, yeah, exactly. I thought she might go to SmackDown. They got Blair Davenport instead. We'll talk about that in a second. But still a good pickup for Raw, though. I mean, it was either her or Roxanne. You were not going to call up both of them. And they really should have made it clear, because it makes no sense, as I texted you in just in general. It makes no fucking sense that you would have Roxanne Perez declare for the draft, and then she doesn't get picked. They should have just said that champions are exempt. So, listen, Roxanne, I know you want to be drafted, but you can't. I know Indy got drafted last year as NXT Women's Champion. The NXT Tag Team Women's Champions got drafted last year. But it's a different time now. Champions cannot be drafted. That would be stupid. Otherwise, why wouldn't you draft Trick Williams number fucking one? Because he's got a lot of potential. They should have just said that. They didn't. But drafting Lyra instead makes sense. I guess that finishes her feud with Roxanne. And I think also putting her on the same show as Becky is smart, because not only can they work against each other at some point, rekindle that match they had from NXT, but hopefully she can kind of learn from her, be a tag team partner to Becky, not win the tag titles necessarily, but maybe she can get over through association with Becky Lynch, who's the now current women's world champion. So I like that pick a lot. I know you do too, being a big Lyra Valkyria fan.
Yeah, I thought it was a good. I'm glad she went to Raw. I will say, I kind of do wish Tiffany went to Raw. I know she's doing the whole Bayley stuff now on SmackDown, but I don't know. I feel like SmackDown just like overcrowded with over women, so I kind of fear for her on SmackDown just a smidge. But I think with Raw specifically, like, I think Valkyria going to Raw made a lot of sense. Like I said, the connection with Becky. I mean, less over women on Raw, so I think. Realistically, it made the most sense for her to go to Raw. Maybe we'll get some of the damage control. She can help out Becky. We get that connection, kind of help boost her up a little bit too. And I think Raw made the most sense for her specifically. So glad she's on Raw. I think there's plenty of things to do with her. She's great. Loved it.
You mentioned Tiffany, you know, probably should have been on Raw, which I agree with, because I feel like SmackDown, especially when Charlotte comes back, they just have too many top stars in that women's division on Friday nights. And she's going for the championship on Saturday at Backlash. I don't think she's winning, again, spoiler alert. Maybe after the match, if she loses, they haven't done Bayley and Tiffany one-on-one yet, but I did see that report from WrestleVotes indicating they might do trades. So maybe they can trade. Maybe she complains to Nick Aldis and he gets her traded to Raw before the deadline on Monday. That way she can be with her boyfriend in real life, Ludwig Kaiser.
I was going to say, that would make most sense, too. I didn't know why they drafted her and Ludwig apart, but I think, like I said, once I saw the trade thing from WrestleVotes, I was like, she'd be the perfect candidate for that. I don't know if you'd trade back, but...
That's what I'm thinking. Are they going to trade back?
Cash considerations. I don't know. Pick next year. Who knows?
Yeah. You know what? It might end up being a 2-for-1 pick. Dawn and Fire for Tiffany Stratton. Even though they're not going to do shit on SmackDown. They're probably thinking, no, get us the fuck away from SmackDown. We did not do shit on that show. But that might be what it is, because they're really not all that valuable. No offense, but they're really not all that valuable on their own. So maybe the idea is, 2-for-1, like, okay, I wouldn't make that pick if I was fucking Adam Pearce, if I was Nick Aldis, but whatever, I guess that might be what they do. So that would make sense. I know they're not married, but still, I mean, it would be nice if they were on the same show. Throw them a bone. Round 6, they had the Final Testament go to Raw, DIY go to SmackDown. Necessary moves, I thought. Bronson Reed stay on Raw, and Blair Davenport from NXT, who we mentioned earlier, from NXT, headed to SmackDown. So another nice name added to the SmackDown women's division. Probably not doing much other than jobs, but, you know, it's still nice to see her in the main roster. Any names stand out here, or just kind of standard fare?
I thought this was pretty chalk at this point. I mean, the Final Testament, get away from the Pride, made sense.
Mm-hmm.
DIY on SmackDown made sense, because Candice and Indy are... I sometimes just combine people's names. Candice and Indy are already on SmackDown, so that makes sense. And Bronson Reed staying on Raw made sense. If he's in the U.S. or Intercontinental title picture, laying out Sammy and Chad Gable on Raw would make sense for him to stay there.
Hated that he went so late. I mean, he's, again, challenging for the Intercontinental Championship, and they drafted him underneath, like, rounds below people like
Nakamura.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, I hate to keep bragging on Nakamura, but it's true. Nakamura hasn't done shit in weeks, and Bronson, literally, it's not just like he's challenging for the championship. This goes to show you how pointless the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is. If you win that, it doesn't mean shit, because he got drafted almost last on round 6 in the televised draft. What the fuck? Under the Final Testament. Who I like, but again, they're a loser faction, so what does that say about Bronson Reed? The rest of the picks made after the show was over, again, nothing really to, you know, write home about here, but we had New Catch Republic headed to Raw. The Creeds and Ivy Nile staying on Raw, thank God, which means that we might still get that Creed Brothers and Chad Gable heel pairing at some point. Odyssey Jones, I know you had milk this morning, Mr. Marceau. If you check in the back of the car, you might see his face. He's been gone for the last year. He was drafted to Raw last year. Didn't do shit. Never shown. Not even done shit. He hasn't even been shown on the show. Like, you could think that he got fired a year ago, and I wouldn't blame you, because they have not shown him a single time. But he was eligible. Like, he's eligible, but Dexter Lumis is not, who we also have not seen, but they did not draft him, which just I don't understand. But he's headed to Raw, staying on Raw, I guess. Natalya staying on Raw. Who cares?
He's heading to Raw, I guess.
Ooh, exciting. We'll just forget last year ever happened. Kaden Carter and Katana Chance headed to Monday nights as well. Or they're already on Raw, I'm sorry. Tegan Nox going to SmackDown. Giovanni going to SmackDown. Might be headed to the unemployment line of them, unless they could find him something to do. I mean, honestly, he might get that Cameron Grimes call in the next couple of days. I would not be shocked. And I hate to say it, but it's true. Same thing with Apollo Crews. Can't imagine what more he would do on SmackDown. And then finally, the Raw Dijak from NXT, headed back to the main roster. I love that pick. I do worry he might get lost in the shuffle with all the people they have on Raw, because, spoiler alert, I do think Raw got the better roster of the two. But, yeah, any of the supplemental picks stand out to you? Any blue chippers here you think to keep an eye out for?
Looks like a lot of spring cleaning releases in a couple of years for the next year, unfortunately. I mean, honestly, this is just, I'm not that I, it doesn't really matter, but I just don't understand why they drafted like 10 tag teams of the women to Raw, and then they put Candice and Indy and Piper and Chelsea on SmackDown. Like, what are they going to do? Like, that's what I don't get. Like, that's the one thing I think with the women's tag teams where it should be both. They should kind of, the champion should, because they realistically, they allegedly can defend on both brands. Mm-hmm. But, like, the Kabuki Warriors never did or never have, really. So why would you draft Candice? Like, there's two teams on SmackDown, there's like 10 on Raw, but then that makes no sense because, I mean, I guess technically if Jade and Bianca won them, they'd go to SmackDown, they're on SmackDown, but I don't know, I just think they should just keep them, if they're going to defend them, I guess, on both brands, I guess I'm fine with it, but I feel like when Damage Control had them, they only defended them on SmackDown.
Yeah, no, you're right. I know Chance and Carter faced Dawn. Yeah, I mean, they faced Fire and Dawn once. Kaden Carter and Katana Chance did for like a 2-minute match on SmackDown in January, and then they were kind of put back in the broom closet where Chance, or where Dawn, I mean, I guess Chance and Carter were too. But Dawn and Fire, they didn't really use again after that. We hadn't seen them for 6 months prior to that point. We really haven't seen them since. I agree with that. I wouldn't put all the women's tag teams on Raw because I would hope at some point we could see more of Candice and Indy on their own. I mean, they could be aligned, obviously, but, you know. Well, the thing is, partially for them, they had to go to SmackDown. DIY had to go to SmackDown because they've lost the World Tag Title matches on Raw like 3 times now. They had to get drafted. And you need to put Candice and Johnny together, so that makes sense. But yeah, as, I mean, if Bianca and Jade win them, maybe they could do that feud on SmackDown, or just use Candice on her own feuding with Bayley or something. Maybe that's too optimistic of me to think, because they really haven't done shit with her since she's been back in the company. But I think that's why they may have done that. But I do like Dijak being on Raw, like I said, out of these picks. Of the overall rosters, I don't have them in front of me, but we just went over all of them just now. Is it safe to say Raw got the stronger roster? I don't want to say SmackDown got swept. And we say this every year, Raw gets the better roster, which it typically does. But like this roster is not just like, it's not just like 08 stacked with star power. Like in 08, they had Cena, Batista, Michaels, Jericho, Punk. They had just a ridiculous roster back then. This isn't stacked with star power necessarily, but it does have a lot of people that are going to go in there and beat the shit out of each other and have great matches. Like I'm talking Braun Breaker, Dijak, we have Strowman, but you know, whatever. Ilya Dragunov, Gunther, Sheamus, Drew, Punk, Rollins. I mean, these are some, not blue chippers, but some real, you know, amazing assets to your show. So, do you think Raw got the stronger of the two shows? I feel like it did.
Raw got the better men. SmackDown got the better women.
Yep. Yep.
I think SmackDown probably still has more star power overall.
You think so?
If you count the champions, if you count the champions, I'd say so. Still,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I think definitely the men. I think obviously, I think that's without saying. Raw got the, but I think I mean, like you said, you were talking about earlier, the SmackDown six. I mean, if even if they, especially if they keep Tiffany and SmackDown, I mean, they have like 6 to 7 like top women on SmackDown, and I. Yeah, I mean, I think the SmackDown Women's Division will be fine. Raw, will see what happens. I think they have some, they move some people back down and Lyra called up. I mean, I don't know what their plans are for the people that are already there, like Natalya or Zoe or Shayna, Carter and Chance. I mean, I don't know if they're just strictly tag teams at this point or they actually see them somewhere else, but we'll see what happens, but SmackDown's women's division. I thought women's division was better before the draft, and I think it got even better after the draft. So, I mean, it's pretty stacked.
Yeah, I mean, on Raw, I mean, it's SmackDown definitely got the better of the women's division. I don't really think there's much to debate there. Raw still does have Becky Lynch, obviously, as champion.
It was better before the draft there, so I don't think they really would change that much. But yeah. I don't know. I just, like I said, I just think it's pretty stacked.
Yeah, no, it definitely is stacked. At least for Raw, SmackDown has the better women's division, you know, bar none. But on Raw, they do have Becky as champion. The Liv thing still kind of simmering. Rhea Ripley, when she comes back, will obviously be on Raw. So those are your top three stars right there. They got rid of Nia. I didn't mention Nia. I forgot about Nia. Nia got drafted to SmackDown, which I think was a necessary move. She has already feuded with Rhea and Becky, so that was a good move to make. So you have those three. Lyra's now on Raw. Kiana James, we'll see how much of an impact she makes. Might not be all that big, and they have a lot of random-ass tag teams they're probably not going to do shit with, so it's kind of more about the top of the card. We'll see what they could do with those women. I would love to see, like, Kaylee Ray and Becky rip it up, but Kaylee Ray just, I think they've pretty much given up on. But we'll see. We'll see what they do coming out of this draft. Now, these rosters do not go into effect until Monday, so like I said earlier, they might do the trades or whatever between now and then. That was teased by WrestleVotes. Tiffany would be a nice trade to Raw. I think they could use her on Monday nights. They already have a lot of star power, but specifically on the men's side, as you said, SmackDown is the better women's roster. So putting Tiffany on Raw would make more sense. I don't think that's going to happen, though, because I just feel like they're doing the triple threat for a reason with Bayley, Becky, or Bayley, Tiffany, and Naomi. If Tiffany was just going to go to Raw, I feel like they would have just done Bayley and Tiffany one-on-one, have Tiffany lose, and then trade her, but they're not doing that, so I don't know. I guess we'll see what they do. They might not do any trades at all, but that was the talk. Rosters lock on Monday. Before that, though, we got Backlash coming up on Saturday in France, 1 p.m. Eastern start time. Pretty, I don't want to say a mid-card. I mean, all these matches are extremely predictable, so these predictions will not last long at all. But I do think these shows are largely carried by the crowds in the international atmosphere. They've had a lot of great ones so far under Triple H and under Nick Khan. This one should also be very fun. They have not been to France for a major pay-per-view PLE ever, to my knowledge, so this should be a good show. Only five matches, though. They might announce another one on SmackDown, but this is a mostly SmackDown card anyway. There's only one match, one Raw match, and that's for the World Heavyweight Championship, so I guess I'll ask you about that one first. Damian Priest defending against Jey Uso. They really want you to think Jey Uso's a threat. He won that six-man tag team match for his team on Raw, pinning Finn Balor. He is not winning that World Heavyweight Championship, but I don't know. Do you think Jey Uso could walk out the new World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Marcel?
Put the belt on him, baby! Put the belt on him! I mean, like you said, they're really, like, making you feel like he's going to win, and I mean, I feel like they've done that multiple times, and he's lost every time. I just feel like, you know what it is? I just feel like he was dropped in the first round. Like we said, we don't really know what that's happening, like what that really means to them. I mean, when Cody left Raw, he was like, oh, you guys are in good hands. Like, Jey Uso was like the top guy, I mean, Priest has kind of been an afterthought since he won the belt. He won the belt, and it was basically all about Drew and Punk. I mean, he won the belt, and he really hasn't done anything since. And I think with Jey, like, if he doesn't win, like, what do you do with him next? Like, I mean, I guess you'd eventually do something with the Bloodline, I assume, but we're not, like, really there. And he's on Raw, and they're on SmackDown, so I really don't know if he lost, like, what's next for him. I don't know what you do with him if he loses, so... I think Priest is kind of more of a stopgap guy than they really see him at that level. So I'm going to go with Jey. Like I said, I think they're probably just teasing us. But with all the Judgment Day kerfluffle and they always keep getting egg on their face, I just feel like it could happen again on Saturday. Maybe McDonough, one of them, tries to get involved. It kind of backfires on Priest. We see more cracks in the Judgment Day. And... yeah, I mean, they don't seem the same since Rhea's been gone, and this could kind of prove that they're just not on all cylinders. So I'm going to go with Jey. I'll crack the egg on my head after he loses, but I'm going with Jey.
Listen, dude, they have another pay-per-view 3 weeks later. They need to set up a rematch somehow for that show. I guess they could just crown another number one contender before King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia, but the pay-per-view's 3 weeks after this one. You might as well just keep the feud going. It's been a pretty basic feud so far, but you could really switch things up by putting the belt on Jey, if only for 3 weeks, and then put the belt on Damien. That is a lot of game of hot potato, but in that case, I'd be okay with it, because Jey Uso has not won shit. I mean, he won the tag titles with... he won a WrestleMania, I get that, but, like, won championships, I'm talking about. Like, he has not won much lately. He did hold the tag titles with Cody for 8 days. But in the last year, he has failed to win the United States Championship, the WWE Championship, the World Heavyweight Championship at least once or twice, not including this time. He's failed to win the Intercontinental Championship, lost the tag team titles. Like, the guy needs a title at some point, a lot like LA Knight, who also continues to lose championship opportunities. I don't think it happens here. I'm going to go Damien. I'm going the safe pick. But Jey Uso winning would make for an amazing reaction in France and really set up an interesting scenario. Like you said, with the Judgment Day kind of falling out and whatnot, them further teasing tension, how that affect Rhea Ripley when she comes back, that might be the more intriguing outcome, but we'll see what happens on Saturday.
I just also feel like you said, like, maybe he wins it here, and then he loses back in the ring. Like, every time he's lost the title shot, it's because he's got screwed. Like, guy's been fucked out of them all, so it's like, this guy's just the unluckiest son of a bitch in the world if he just loses another one. Like, if there's, like, Judgment Day interference again, like, I don't know, like you said, maybe we do get Judgment Day interference and he loses again and he gets a title shot at King of the Ring. And maybe you know what? Someone pulls out Damien, it's the hoodie, and it's Jimmy, and he helps his brother out at King of the Ring and helps his brother win the belt. And that's how we kind of get the start of the bloodline reforming. So maybe that's where we go from there. But, I mean, it makes cinema. People love that shit. Except maybe his brother actually helps him. Who knows?
I'll do you one better. What if someone cost him the championship? Maybe the Judgment Day, you know, it's not the Judgment Day. Maybe it's Jacob Fatu, because, you know, a lot of people are expecting him on Saturday in the tag team match. What if it's not in that match? What if it's in this match? Jacob Fatu costs Jay the win. And then he demands Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce to be traded back to SmackDown to get his hands on the bloodline. And that's how we get Jay back on the same show as the rest of the bloodline. Because like you said, after this loss, I really don't know what you do with Jay Uso on Raw. So maybe he gets traded back to SmackDown by the end of the week, and that's very possible. He wouldn't win the World Heavyweight Championship, but I mean, there's a chance.
I guess. I don't love it, but I like him on his own for now. That's the thing. I like that he's away from everyone else.
Yeah.
If we're like bringing him back to SmackDown, he's just like in the whole.
Yeah. He would just be another bloodline guy. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like it's one of those things where they could definitely have him. I mean, they're going to have him involved in the bloodline thing at some point. I just don't know if it happens here or if they just hold off until later on. But I still have Damian Priest going over, still World Heavyweight Champion. Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill versus the Kabuki Warriors, WWE Women's Tag Team titles. I mean, we're almost guaranteed a title change here. Not just the fact they switch shows, because that doesn't really matter. The belts can obviously flow. I think Bianca and Jade losing at this point would be dumb. I know you said you want to see more from Jade. I agree. But I think you put the belts on them and you build the Jade and Bianca a little bit further down the road so we can get that match. But I think we get new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions on Saturday.
Oh, easily. I think this is Jade Bianca win LOL. I think it makes the most sense. You kind of pointed out that Jade probably needs a little bit more work. Put it with Bianca. They can hold the belts. She can still do like single feuds. Like, I don't know. They're facing a tag team. They can still do like one-on-one matches. I kind of build that up. And obviously, I think eventually we'll get her and Bianca, which will be nice. So I think they should win the belts.
Yeah, I think so, too. Bayley defending the WWE Women's Championship in a triple threat against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. I think this will be a good match. Tiffany's obviously shined so far in the main roster. Naomi is over, and Bayley's great, so I think this will be a fun time. Bayley just won the belt. Doesn't mean that she can't lose it right away, but I would not do that. I would keep the belt on Bayley, build the Bayley and Tiffany one-on-one at some point. I think Bayley retains the title here. What say you?
Naomi, just kidding. I think it's Bayley here. I'd love for it to be Tiffany. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think you should obviously keep the belt on Bayley a little bit longer as well. Should be a good match, but I got Bayley here.
All right. So we mentioned the Bloodline tag team match earlier. Randy Orton and Kevin Owens versus the Bloodline. Solo Sikoa and the in-ring debut in WWE, anyway, of Tama Tonga. This should be a good matchup. I like that they're continuing the Orton and KO, the RKO, so to speak, tag team from before WrestleMania. They're still on the same page, taking on common enemies in the Bloodline. I like that. This has got to be their introduction to Jacob Fatu, right? I mean, he might not be coming in right away. Maybe they hold off until fucking June because they really want to stretch this shit out. But I don't know, man. I feel like this is in just a ready-made opportunity. I mean, I know I'm impatient. I just want to see him on the show. But I think this might be where he debuts and cost Orton and Owens the victory.
I thought he was costing Jey Uso the match.
He's going to do both. He's in Paris, or he's in Lyon, rather, so he'll do both.
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless of what happens, I mean, the Bloodline need to win, especially Solo. Guy was weeping about wins and losses, Matt, and the guys don't want a match in fucking 6 months, so I think Solo and Tama Tonga win here. It could be a debut of some sort for Jacob Fatu. I think him, the janitor, anyone, they need to win badly, so I think they win. Orton and KO can eat a loss. It's not a big deal.
If I'm Kevin Owens, I want to get traded to Raw. Just because I'm done with the Bloodline. I've been feuding with them for 4 years now. I'm ready to move the fuck on. Doesn't look like that'll happen. But if I was him, I would want to get the fuck off the show. So maybe they could trade him off of SmackDown onto Raw for one of Raw's talents. I don't know who that would be, but just the thought. And then the main event, probably the most predictable match on the show, and I'm still looking forward to it. First time ever one-on-one. Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles for the Undisputed WWE Championship. Haven't really done a lot to sell you on the idea that AJ is going to win, but like I said earlier, they still have another pay-per-view in a couple of weeks after this one. They'll probably just continue the feud, I would have to imagine. I don't think they put the belt on AJ after Cody just beat Roman Reigns in one of the biggest matches ever. I don't think that happens. But I do think they go on there and have a really fun match, and I'm looking forward to this. So Cody Rhodes wins, LOL, but I think this will be a very good main event. So what do you think is going to happen?
AJ, phenomenal form, 1, 2, 3, just kidding.
Cody what is Hell in the Cell 2016?
I mean, this is just, I mean, like I said, the predictability, I feel like, that. Maybe that's another reason why I feel like there's a chance Jay could win, just because you feel like Priest would probably hold on to the belt, but I don't know, I feel like everything else is pretty predictable in no sense, so I'll go with, I think, obviously, Cody. I mean, he just beat Roman Reigns, like you said, in one of the biggest matches of WrestleMania. Roman held the belt for 4 years. I doubt Cody's going to drop the belt a month later in Lyon, France. It's just not happening. So Cody wins. Maybe we continue the feud of King of the Ring. I don't really know why they have two pay-per-views so close to each other. I know the Saudi shows make them a lot of money, but maybe they should have booked better. I don't know.
I was going to say that it's because they have a like their July pay-per-view. Like last year, they had Money in the Bank in early July. And then it was the same weekend last year with the Saudi show, the same weekend as Backlash, too. They had 3 weeks in between Backlash in Puerto Rico and the Saudi show, which was at that point Night of Champions. They only had only a couple weeks between those two, and then like 6 weeks to build the Money in the Bank. That's not the case this year, actually, because they have Clash of the Castle, which I'm looking forward to in Scotland, but that's only 3 weeks after King of the Ring. So they have 3 weeks in between this pay-per-view and the next one, and then that one between that one and that one, and then 3 weeks between that one and Money in the Bank in Toronto. So they have a lot of...
But then they have like a month, and then they have like a month between that and...
SummerSlam, yeah.
SummerSlam.
Yeah, so they have some time. I don't know. But yeah, that's... I don't know. They've done this before, but... Listen, I love the international stuff, but 3 weeks just is not enough time to build a lot of these storylines. I know it's an extra week, like, oh, what's that going to do? But 4 weeks is more ideal than three. I just feel like... I feel like WrestleMania wasn't that long ago. I mean, that was definitely 4 weeks ago at this point, but I feel like even that wasn't that long ago, and that we're already here, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see if it takes the toll on the build of these shows or if it doesn't end up making a difference because the shows are so good that it doesn't even really matter. So I'm hoping that's the case with this show. It looks like a fun show on paper, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll be back here on the show next Thursday to break it down. As predictable as it might be, we'll discuss it here on the show. I'll talk some more AEW if Tony Khan says something stupid on the NFL Network. We'll talk about that as well. New episodes every single week on WrestleRant.com, WrestleRantRadio.com, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, Podbean, Pandora, Amazon Music. Find the show, rate the show, review the show, subscribe to the show. New episodes every single Thursday. Enjoy the weekend, Mr. Marceau. Enjoy Backlash in your... I was going to say home country. You're more of a Canadian guy, right? Or French. Marceau's in the name. I feel like
French-Canadian.
You have a...
Yeah, it's...
French-Canadian.
It's a French last name, or like my... it's a French-Canadian descent, I guess, if you want to... That's where my like French family is from. It's from Canada, so...
I feel like this is your show, then. I feel like you'll feel right at home watching this when you get a chance to watch it.
It's like me and Montreal, the prodigal son.
Exactly. I'll have you on the mind while I'm watching the show, but we'll talk about it next week, brother. Enjoy the weekend.
Have a good one.
You too, bye.
Join Graham, GSM Matthews, and RJ Marceau every Thursday as they run down their weekly wrestling rants, offer expert analysis, host exclusive interviews, and more. Subscribe today on all your favorite podcast platforms and never miss an episode of Wrestle Rant Radio.